So in this presentation, we are going to look at giant earthquakes as seen from gravity satellites orbiting the Earth. And first, let me acknowledge my co-authors, Sylvain, Clément, Dominique, and Jean-Michel, as we have carried out together the work I'm going to show about the 2011 Tohoku earthquake. And as we are going to talk about subduction, let us start with much longer spatial and temporal scales. At those scales, the mass anomalies in the mantle associated with the subducting slabs are known to explain the long wavelengths of the geoid quite well. And actually, because these mass anomalies have a directional organization, north, south, and east-west, according to the geometry of present and past plate boundaries, they create high rates of gravity variations in the east-west and north-south direction. And so we can see them pretty clearly, even though they are deep. But here we want to move to shorter time scales. And we are going to use the time variations of gravity as monitored by the GRACE satellite mission, which gives us access to time scales from monthly to decadal. The GRACE mission is made of two satellites following each other at about 450 kilometer altitude, and the distance variation between the two satellites, distant by about 220 kilometers, are measured, and from these distance variations, geoid models are built every month or every 10 days by research teams in the world with resolution between 250 or 400 kilometers. So this mission is well designed to map mass fluxes at scales in between those of local and global plate dynamics. And because GRACE optimal accuracy is obtained at intermediate spatial scale, we are going to focus at those scales, which is where GRACE is best. Another interest of this data is that the satellites provide us an homogeneous or nearly homogeneous space-time coverage. And thus, this allows us to zoom out and study the earthquakes not only near the epicentral area, but in a much wider space-time surrounding. And actually, we are going to study episodic mass fluxes at the scale of the Earth's regional structure. And in what follows, I'll show results obtained from the analysis of GRGS Release 3 geoid models produced by the Space Geodesy team of JET Toulouse. How does GRACE see an earthquake, a giant earthquake? We obtain gravity variations at long wavelengths, so the data are quite sensitive to broad-scale processes. And until now, gravity variations associated with the co-seismic and post-seismic phases of great earthquakes have been detected. Here you can see two examples, but there are many more in the literature, where we can see the co-seismic gravity variation from the Sumatra 2004 earthquake, with a big gravity low due to crustal dilation, and then a progressive increase of gravity around the trench with a very large scale, very much energy at large scales, which is very consistent with viscoelastic relaxation of the mantle. What we would like to do is to go further and see whether we can bring new information not only on the co-seismic and post-seismic deformations, but also on the pre-seismic phase of giant subduction earthquakes from these GRACE variations, GRACE gravity variation, and take advantage of the sensitivity to mass fluxes not only near the surface, but also at depth. So for that, we are going to analyze transient gravity signal in the regional subduction system considering the March 2011 Tohoku earthquake with the epicenter here. First, we will focus on the regional scales in the GRACE geoid. between 800 and 1,600 kilometers. If we consider larger scales, actually we lose the signal, and we are not focusing near the epicenter, so we start at medium scales. For that, we apply wavelet filtering of the potential in order to extract these components at different scales. And then we are going to study the geometry of the gravity signals following the geometry of the plate boundaries on the slabs. As we have seen in the first example concerning subduction at much longer time scale, the principle will be the same, is to use the direction information and search for oriented gravity variations along the subduction. So what we do actually is a space-time analysis of the Earth's gravity vector. Let's start with the spatial component. So to emphasize gravity signal from oriented mass anomalies, we use simple directional differentiations through the gravity gradient tensor, which elements are the first order derivatives of the different components of the gravity vector. And actually, the idea is quite simple, is that if you have a mass anomaly, like here we have a mass excess, it creates a geoid high. We can see here the mass excess, and we have a geoid high. And also, it deflects the gravity vector towards the source, as it is oriented orthogonal to the equipotential surface. And when we compute the directional differentiation of the potential, we actually study the rate of variation of the gravity vector in space with the first order derivative in blue here for this example, and the second order derivative in pink, which is much more peaked above the mass anomaly. Let us see another example where we have a parallelepiped mass anomaly with a width W and at depths similar to the width. The geoid anomaly gives us the location of the source, and when we use the gravity gradient tensor, we obtain a description of the geometric variations of the variations of the geoid in the different directions. And in what follows, we are going to focus on these diagonal components, especially this one. So we will enhance gravity variations in the direction orthogonal to that of the differentiation. And we should pay attention that the sign of this gradient anomaly is opposite to the sign of the geoid anomaly. So it means if we are used to have a geoid high above a mass excess, here we should look for a gradient low above a mass excess. Signs are reversed. So this was used from a previous satellite gravity mission to enhance deep slab signals in the lower mantle. And this was also applied to study the Tohoku earthquake from satellite gravity. For example, here we see results obtained by Fuchs et al., a team of German colleagues, and they have evidenced a long-term gravity variation by making a difference 1 year of data before, 1 year of data after the Tohoku earthquake, which is represented here. It corresponds to the vertical gradient. And they noticed that the gravity anomaly is actually shifted southwest, about 100 kilometers southwest, with respect to what was expected from gravity variations computed from a co-seismic slip model. And discrepancies were also noted in another study by Dai et al. 2014 from the Ohio State University, where they noticed that the orientation of slip suggested by the gravity anomaly was slightly tilted with respect to that coming from geodesy. So let's look how an earthquake signal would look like. We consider an example. This is a very big event with a 10-meter thrust slip on a 1,200 kilometer long fault plane. The width of the plane is 100 kilometer. Its orientation is given by the pink line, and the dip is 30 degrees. And here you have the geoid signal. And when we look at the gravity gradients at intermediate spatial scales, as we are going to do, here are signals that we can obtain. And here, in this analysis, we are going to rotate the frame in which we compute the gravity gradient. That is to say, previously, these gradients have been computed in the geocentric spherical frame, or theta phi, with theta pointing to the south and phi to the west. And here, we are going to rotate the frame around the radial axis, as shown here. We obtain the green frame when we have rotated by an angle alpha from the spherical frame, because when we rotate the frame, we will enhance signals according to other orientations than north-south or east-west. And this is what we do here. Here we compute the gravity gradient at an intermediate scale of 1,200 kilometers in the spherical frame in black here. And then we rotate by 20 degrees, and then we rotate again by 20 degrees, again and again up to azimuth 80. And when we have the frame vector oriented parallel and perpendicular to the source, we get the maximum amplitude. And when the orientation of the frame differs from that of the source progressively, the amplitude of the signal is going to decrease. We also note that the orientation of the gravity anomaly remains relatively stable, even though the frame rotations are quite large. Here there is a flip by about plus minus 15 degrees around that of the source. So this is the spatial part. And now we are going to study how these gravity gradients oriented along the subduction change in time. And we will not use prior models. We will describe the variability of the data, look at the data, what's in the data, using spectral analysis, emphasizing scales of variations between months to years. And for that, we are using wavelet transforms of the time series, as an earthquake is expected to be manifested as a local irregularity in the time series. This is an appropriate method to study such kind of variation, local variation in a time series, and to enhance and detect abrupt changes in trend near March 2011. We use very simple functions, Haar wavelets. And actually, what we do is the same as computing the rate of variation of gravity in time for time series moved at different temporal resolution. So let us look at this example where we have a step function, which is centered in March 2011 in gray. And here you can see that we have a maximum in the wavelet transform centered at the time of the step, and the width of this peak is given, corresponds to the scale. And this makes sense. It means that there is a maximum rate of variation of the gravity signal in March 2011. You can see how it looks like on a time series, which is here on the bottom in gray. This is a time series at point 138 degrees east, 38 degrees north, so not so far from the epicenter. We are looking in the orientation, average orientation of the subduction. You can see the step here. And in the transform time series, we have a peak which is centered exactly in March 2011. And now, if the gravity variation is a little bit slower, we will lose the smaller, the fastest components. If we have post-seismic evolution of the time series, as we see in this example, where we have a signal, there is nothing until March 2011, and then we have an exponential decay, then the maximum rate of variation will shift after the earthquake for scales close to those of the exponential. So when we obtain a high rate of variation after the earthquake, it's an indication that there may be a post-seismic process or something else. And it depends on the spatial pattern. And we observe that sometimes the peak shifts before the earthquake, which means that large transient variations have started before March 2011, as shown here in this example, where we have the time series on the bottom at point 144 degrees east, east 44 degrees north, which is in northern Japan. And when the scales are intermediate, the peak shifts slightly before. So we are going to use this spectral analysis in order to build a time evolution representation of the gravity signal. First, we look for the maximum rates of variation in the gravity, searching for peaks. And first, we look for a large transient, which is ongoing in March 2011. It could be a sudden change exactly in March, or it could be a little bit slower change ongoing in March. And if we find this behavior, we fit a step in March 2011. We build a piecewise linear model of the time series with four pieces, two before the earthquake, two after the earthquake. There is a short-term trend just before and a short-term trend just after and a free step at the time of the earthquake. And when we have found a fast transient in March, we keep the step in March. Then we remove it and we do the analysis again and we look if we have fast high rates of variation before or after March 2011, and if so, it will indicate that we have the predominance of pre-seismic or post-seismic variation in the time series, and we keep our trends. And if we find large variations for long time scales and durations, we have a slower process ongoing. What do we find with this kind of analysis? First, look at what we obtained for March 2011. Here are the jumps that have been selected as being part of a transient variation, anomalously large with respect to the behavior of the time series over the preceding year, and ongoing in March. And we observe that there is a clear regional coherence of the gravity variations, which differs very much from random patterns, more random-like patterns at other places. We can find other signals, but this variation follows the subduction. And we also find large changes in trend in the 8 months preceding the rupture, where we have obtained an increased rate of variation, increase in the gravity gradient over a wide area on the deep side of the subduction, and a decrease of the gravity gradient on a wide area south of the triple junction. Let's take a closer look, and we observe a full dynamics of evolution of the gravity signal, where the gravity variation, the anomalous gravity variation, start a few months before March at large scale over a very large region. They continue in March and crossing the triple junction. And they cover an area which is much broader than the near epicentral area, which is included in this area of variation, but it's surrounded by a much wider gravity signal. And in the consecutive year, it will progressively concentrate first on the trench and then shifted on the oceanic side east of Tohoku. So to check these signals, we have looked at the time series. And let me show you an example of time series. So here we take a point here in northern Japan, 142 degrees east, 42 degrees north. We represent by the pink dot the value for the gravity field in March 2011. And the two blue dots correspond to the gravity gradient in February 2011 and in December 2010. There was no gravity field in January 2011 because one accelerometer of the GRACE mission was shut off in order to spare batteries. Unfortunately, it was turned on again in early February. So this is the data which we have analyzed, and you can see that the time series deviates very largely from its variability over the previous 7 years in the winter 2010. Here we have added a red line to mention the March 2011 time. But the increase in gravity between February and March is not so high. It has started before. And here, in this time series, we have removed the annual, semi-annual, and 161-day period sinusoidal terms because they correspond to the water cycle, which creates important gravity variation at seasonal and semi-annual period, or an oceanic tide alias at 161 days. So we added back these terms in order to see if we could see in the original time series the deviations and to check they would be independent from the sinusoidal corrections. And so here on the top, you have the same point, the time series on the same point, where we have added the periodic terms. We can see that indeed there is a quite regular periodic component. We are here in northern Japan, and here on this plot, you can see the amplitude of the annual sinusoid that we have fitted in the GRACE data. And we are right in an area where there is a large and the largest annual signal in the area. And it's certainly winter snow because we have a minimum in the gravity gradient in February, March. So with our change of sign, it means a maximum of mass. So a maximum of mass with this periodicity at the end of the winter looks very much like snow, especially in northern Japan. And it means that the gravity, anomalous gravity variations that we see in the gravity field, they are a gravity increase at the time where usually we have a gravity decrease. It means they suggest a mass decrease at a time where we have a mass annual mass increase from the snow. We can see here in this time series the two blue dots in December 2010 and February 2011. They completely interrupt the annual variations. And actually, this is true not only for this point, but for the entire area. This shows us also, we have compared the amplitude of the annual cycle with that of the pre-seismic gravity variation, and they are as large as the annual cycle. So you imagine it's a variation in gravity which is as large as the usual annual variability, but in opposite phase, and that will cover quite a broad area. We see other example here on this point, which is a little more to the south. We have a more important co-seismic. When I say co-seismic, it's at the resolution of satellite gravity. We have one field every month, so we cannot make the difference with early post-seismic deformation. So it would mean co-seismic plus a few weeks of post-seismic evolution. But here we have a step which is more important between March and February, when we come closer to the epicenter. And in all the series, we have a large interruption in the winter 2010, when compared to the annual regularity. Oula. And if we remove the annual cycle, anomalous character of this point shows up very clearly. So in the Sea of Japan, you can see it as well. Here in this time series, we have added back the ocean model that was used in the processing of the GRACE data, as it takes 10 days to cover the whole globe. Variations in gravity faster than 10 days need to be removed, otherwise they will alias in the gravity solution. This removal cannot be done perfectly. That is why we fit an oceanic tide alias. But here we have added back the contribution of the ocean model that was used for that purpose. And here you see the time series, again, without any seasonal correction, any periodic correction, where the values at winter in the winter 2010 are very high. And when we perform the sinusoidal correction, they deviate very importantly. And we can also notice that the series keep high values afterwards. It's not transient. It will remain, this variation will remain in the field. That's another difference with classical water cycle signals. We have carried out the analysis, repeated the same kind of analysis, searching for this behavior during the previous years, and around Japan we find nothing. And we have confirmed again by performing another analysis, where we take the time series and we search for large monthly deviations. That is, we consider that each time series is made of a long-term linear trend plus residuals, that the residuals have a Gaussian distribution. From that, we can compute the probability of occurrence of the value. And here, the gray and pink line show the 90 and 97.5 percentiles of the long-term time series. And you can see that from December 2010, we have deviations above the 97, close to or above the 97.5 percentile of the time series, whether we have the ocean model or not, with a spatial distribution represented here, which is very similar to the one we have shown before. And we have checked that continental hydrological signals do not leak, do not induce large signals in the Japan Sea. And finally, as I mentioned before, last characteristic of this anomalous variation, precursory variation, is that it leaves a persistent fingerprint in the gravity field. It's not vanishing. Here you see the time series where for northern Japan, for the Sea of Japan, and for the Izu-Bonin area, where we have removed the co-seismic and post-seismic signals, and you can see that the time series, the value remain high, near the 90 percentile of the previous year, or low, below the 90 percentile of the 2.5 percentile of the time series. So what does it mean? Okay, I will go very quickly. We notice that the gravity variations follow the regional orientation of the subduction. and they propagate from the deep side to the shallow side of the subduction. And from that, we believe that there is this indicates a depth to surface dynamics. We don't believe it shows that there is a depth to surface dynamics of mass transport surrounding the occurrence of the giant event, which occurred as the most extreme part of this broad deformation propagating from depth to surface. And if we come back to the precursory signal, it indicates a mass decrease, a large-scale mass decrease. So we propose it could be slab extension around depths about between 100 and 360 kilometers if we locate this anomaly with respect to the depths of the Pacific slab. We have a coincidence for depths between 100 and 350 kilometers with the gravity signal located where seismicity vanishes. And preceding at depths, the shallower acceleration of seismic release reported before the rupture. And we find it can be modeled equivalently by a normal faulting, using a normal faulting model. And we have an equivalent of a magnitude 8.4 event over a few months around 250-300 kilometer depths. After which, the deformation will propagate to the surface, and I don't have time, so I will skip. I will skip to the end. The deformation propagates to the surface, and if we compare the observed gravity signal with that modeled from slip distributions based on geodetic observation, we notice again that we have a much broader spatial extent over the ocean, and also we have a different orientation in the observed versus predicted gravity anomalies. On the right column, you have the gravity anomaly predicted from co-seismic slip model by Minson et al. 2014. On the left column, you have the observed anomalies, and we have reported in contour lines here the observed anomaly in order to stress the difference in orientation between the geodetic model that is oriented along the local strike of the subduction and the gravity signal that implies motion of both Pacific and Philippine sea plate across the triple junction and a more an orientation which corresponds to that of the regional subduction. Okay. And I will conclude that from gravity, we can indeed detect episodic mass transfers at timescales of months within the entire subduction system from depth to surface, that we have evidence for timescales of months as slab penetrate within the upper mantle, which is where we find precursory variation in the gravity field before the earthquake. That this deformation may not be observable in at the surface from crustal displacement because they are deep and because they call for highly deformable layers in the slab and at its boundaries, and that hopefully these results show the interest of time-varying gravity to study regional dynamics of mass redistribution associated with giant events.